Hello, all, and welcome to the Fantasy and Sci-Fi Fanatics Podcast. I'm your host, Dana Kubal. Today, I have a very special returning guest, Shmi Stovall. How are you doing today?
Pretty good, pretty good. Coming at you live from the 1920s here in my black and white world.
I like it. Like, as soon as you popped on, it's like, ooh, this is like a vibe. I like it for a Friday. It's awesome. Well, I'm so glad we could have you back on. I loved our first conversation. With Half-Life Empire, and we talked about so many, of your other books. There's so many. It was just looking through Audible because, like, you had a they had a sale for you, and I was just like, oh, I'm gonna grab that one, and it was like $6. I was like, oh, cool, I already have that one on Kindle. So for me, it just helps, right, to get through or quicker with my son. So I'll do like half Kindle in the car, or Audible in the car. Then when I get home, I'll just keep going with Kindle. And I loved the other ones that I was listening to. So I was like, oh, I really like the narrators and stuff. So I was like, oh, let's do this thing. So I think I bought like five Audibles like the same day. And I was like, oh, okay. And I was like, I think then the next day there were two more that were on sale. So
Yeah,
I
Audible really's got my back, so.
it was awesome. I was like, oh, this is super cool. So I was really happy to see that. So you guys will see a bunch of my reviews coming out in the next several months for Shmi's books. But yeah, I thought it was so cool, to see, you with this urban fantasy. I thought right when I saw it, I was like in love with the cover, checked out the blurb, and I was like, yes, this is definitely the book for me. So I started it, and I can't wait. By the time this interview airs, I'll have already finished, and then I just want the audience to know, make sure you're checking out my review as well, which I'll put in the description link here. That way you guys can check that out. But what a cool idea. So I cannot wait to discuss that with you today. But yeah, thank you so much for coming back and just hanging out and doing the book thing. I always
Oh
appreciate it.
yeah, thanks for having me. You're way too good to me.
Anytime. You guys are both welcome anytime. You just let me know and we'll schedule it. So, but yeah, like what have you been up to? I know it's been like several months, right, since our last interview. I'm just kind of curious what you've been up to, just so our audience knows. I know I'm have you on like all social media, so I know everything.
I've just been busy trying to take over the world,
That's
obviously.
fair.
No, I mean, for the most part, the life of an author is a little boring. Like, I mostly stay home, I do my writing, do my social medias, boring things like administrative stuff, advertising. So Halloween happened, that was fun. John's birthday is in November, so that'll be fun.
Oh, cool.
I had a Kickstarter for another special edition of my Arcanist books, so that was really fun. Lots of really fun things.
That was such a beautiful one too. I was literally like looking at it on my computer. My wife's like, what are you doing? I was like, because I like have my car and stuff recently. I was like, we had like tea stuff. Like, it's been like bill after bill. I'm like, I'm just looking at Shmi's Kickstarter. I was like, don't worry. Like, you have seen, you're looking at nothing here, try my Jedi mind trick on her. But yeah, what an absolutely, like, I'm actually glad I'm not rich because I would have way too many Kickstarters coming to my house. I would be like that Amazon meme, where they like trying to hide all
Yeah, I got
what
a
a
couple of them because whenever I do these Kickstarters, I usually support some of my fellow authors, so I'm like, oh, I'll grab your book and stuff like that. So I do have a couple Kickstarter books. They're beautiful. They're
Oh,
almost so beautiful that I don't like them next to the normal books, you know what I'm saying? So they kind of
I
found their
do,
own special section on the bookshelf because they're just that beautiful.
yeah, they were the couple I was looking at, I was like, this is gorgeous. I can't, like, it's you and like four other authors I know, where I'm just like, holy crap. But like, I just wanted to mention that because I like that, because it's just like, it really goes to show what you can do with Kickstarter, right? If you like really expand yourself. And I just think like you've been really successful with them. So many people have, but it's like, I think if you actually look at the product, you're like, on top of being a great read, you get this just beautiful, it's like a work of art, like my wife was thinking I was looking at like a medieval, book site, because I'm a history buff. So I think she was thinking it was gonna be like thousands of dollars for like, she's like, what are you looking at? I was like, no, this is a newer book. Don't worry, it's okay. But yeah, just gorgeous. It's, yeah, I wouldn't even want to open it, honestly. I would just want to like keep it there. And some of your illustrations and stuff like that, you know, that you guys had in there, I mean, just absolutely amazing. So I loved everything you were sharing on Facebook. And it's nice. I always love when you and I are in like this, like a similar group too, you know, when you take over or, you know, whatever. And I get to see, you know, something like that, you know, in terms of the Kickstarter. It always gives me like the best ideas for stuff I want to do in the future. So yeah. So if nobody's checked those out, you know, check out Shmi's Kickstarters. If any authors out there or creators are like, oh, I'm trying to figure out how to do mine or what I want to put in mine, I'd highly recommend checking out Shmi's because you'll just see it just absolutely gorgeous. So, I mean, it's no wonder that people were like, yeah, I want this product. Like that did not surprise me like at all. So it was super cool.
Yeah, if any other fellow authors have questions about Kickstarter, you're more than welcome to message me at any point. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll answer questions.
Cool. And just so in case anybody's new, don't forget if you go to the description, just check it in now. Don't forget to go to the description. You can find all of Shmi's links and things like that in their social. So feel free to, like she said, give her a ring. But yeah, I just thought that was so cool. I'm like itching now for a Kickstarter after seeing you and a couple other people's. I was like, just what an absolutely gorgeous product. But that's super cool. I'm trying to like give us time, but I cannot wait to talk about what I really want to talk about today. But like we said before, right? You've been back. This is your second time here. But in case our audience has not seen our last episode, what genre or genres do you currently write in and why?
Oh, I write in a lot of genres. I mean, sci-fi and fantasy basically exclusively, but because those genres are partitioned out into so many other genres, you know what I'm saying? Like in fantasy, I do young adult fantasy, I do adult fantasy, I do urban fantasy now with Time Marked Warlock. And those are all considered like different, you know what I'm saying? I do lit RPG, which again is considered different. Sci-fi, I've done like post-apocalyptic, and that was the Half-Life Empire, and I've also done like space opera, so like my Star Mark Rising, you know what I'm saying? Like, so a lot is the answer. It's because I'm a huge, like, I read so much when I was younger, and you know, when I was in college and stuff like that. I'm like a big fan of a ton of genres. I'm a big fan of YA fantasy. I'm a big fan of space opera. I'm a big fan of post-apocalyptic. You know what I'm saying? Like, I love those genres. So I had to write in them.
I think that makes total sense. You know, there's like things my friend and I talk about where I have like a historical fiction, fantasy, whatever you want to call it, like a Mughal dynasty. I was like, what happens if you're in like this time era in a fantasy setting in a similar, you know, like you're in the middle of all these other empires and then there's like magic and a bunch of cool crap, right? And you take this, my friend was, well, her masseur and I were talking. I was like, do you think this could be like cozy fantasy? And he was like, I don't know, it's fantasy. And I think you could go, you know, a lot of different subgenres. But I was like, it's my kind of thing, you know, like I was talking to Paul S. Kemp privately. Like, I love his Hammer and Blade series. To me, like, they usually stay in the city and maybe it's not cozy fantasy for some people. For me, though, I think it's like, I consider it really cozy. It's probably too violent for most people to consider cozy, but for me, I'm like, this is my kind of cozy fantasy. So I totally get it. It's like there's just so many cool subgenres, and cyberpunk I think is always cool. And I had CT Pips on again, and we're just
Yeah,
going over
cyberpunk is great. I like
cyberpunk.
cyberpunk quite a bit. Yeah.
But I agree, right? There's always something where you're like, oh, this is really cool. I like this. I like the like, Ness Brown. Oh my gosh, her novella. Like it was like such a great like alien-esque type of
Yeah.
novella. Oh, it was so good. I like flew through that one. So that like gave me like I was like I had to go back to some of the alien stuff and rewatch and read. So I totally get that. And I think it's funny though because you're like one of those people, one of those authors where I was like trying to get a little bit of something from each genre when I was
Oh
doing on
yeah.
Instagram or TikTok. But then I forgot one. So I was like, oh, I think that book sounds really cool. So I had to add that. But it was cool our last interview because when I posted that stuff, I had so many people like private message be like, who's this author? What's this book? So that was like really cool. But I think I just want to mention because I think it shows, right? There's a stigma for indie authors in particular, right? Where you don't, or was like, oh, stick to one genre. But you know, I've talked to people recently who are doing multiple things, kind of like Steven Arian, you know. And I think that that actually, I mean, Brandon Sanderson is a good example, I think, right? Where even, traditional, right? It's like one thing, but even with like his YA, you have the whatever librarians at the end of the world or whatever, young librarians or whatever. And now it's like a TV series. So I think if he limited himself, that would be limiting a lot of really cool things. So I don't know. I think you're a great example of what happens when you really love, a genre, a subgenre, and you really enjoy consuming that product and then, present a really good one as well. So I think that that's actually a really good lesson to learn. Maybe we're turning the tide here on expectations for indie authors or creators, but I don't know. I think that I like to do that too, because there's just like, I like these things over here or over here. And I don't know. I think I just get bored writing in the same genre and probably wouldn't want to do it or something after a while. So.
Well, I think for indie authors, it if your goal is to make money, like lots of money, it usually is better to continually write in the same genre because a lot of your fans transfer over. So just because I'm a huge fan of post-apocalyptic science fiction and YA fantasy, not a lot of my readers are people who cross over like that.
Interesting.
So even though I write and launch the genres, I would say that I'm doing author on hard mode because that it does not allow for audience transfer that much. And that's the benefit of just continually writing in the same genre. Like if I just kept writing post-apocalyptic type of stuff, all of my readers are obviously fans of that. And so then when I write a new book, there's a bigger bump in the like launch of it because the people who like my other post-apocalyptic series are going to like another post-apocalyptic series, that kind of thing. So, I guess just from a technical business standpoint, if you are an indie author, it is better or easier for you financially to just stick to one genre. But I have been lucky in my career that I make enough money that I can write in other genres without worrying too much about like, oh, I need to retain every single reader or else I'm gonna go bankrupt or something. You know what I'm saying? Like that's not. So if for as general advice, I would generally advise to stick to a genre and become known in that genre and then branch out. But if you're lucky and you have a hit series or something, I mean, you can do whatever you want at that point. But yeah, it's just general advice that, I just want that on the record.
It's okay. I'm the maverick. Don't worry about it. I'll get I but like well, I guess what I'm saying is like based off of people I've had on, especially recently, a lot of people I've known, and I think I've talked about this quite a few times recently, if people are returning, where I guess my plan is to have a certain set of urban fantasy, a certain number, right? At least three. And then, but I also want to co-launch at the same time. I'm gonna do urban fantasy and fantasy. So for me, I'm always thinking like going dual that way already, right off the bat. So whoever I get, because I already have the stories like ready,
Nice.
if that makes sense. Like, couldn't decide what to do, so I just kept doing stuff. And when I had writer's block, I just went over here, and it just helps me to keep writing, if that makes sense. So that's what kind of where my thought was at. But I do think it's interesting that to talk to readers where it's so weird, because like if your name's on the book after I've read your last one, it doesn't matter if it's Mimic Arcanus or Half-Life Empire. You know what I mean? Like, I'm gonna buy it and read it. So I do think it's interesting though to see from a technical standpoint how authors who are selling books, if that kind of thing is crossing over. But it's weird because I've talked to so many like fellow authors who are readers where they're like the same way. They're like, oh, I like that person. Like if James Logan for the Silver Road Promise, if he's gonna write something, I'll read it because I like your guys's world building. I like how, like tone, voice, whatever you want to
There are
call
definitely some fans who become fan of an author. Like I
That's
have
a good way to put it.
fans, who like me and who will read any book I come out with. I'm not saying they don't exist. I'm saying that just some people, because YA fantasy is definitely like leagues apart from a post-apocalyptic. You know what I'm saying? So some people might be like, well, I want to read a fun YA adventure novel, and I don't want to read anything that's even mildly depressing, because post-apocalyptic stuff is it tends to lean more towards, and then there were cannibals or there are like raiders or
I can see where your white young YA probably wouldn't like.
Yeah,
Come back
so
over.
somebody who's in the mood to have that fun adventure, you know, like that kind of thing, might not be in the mood for the dour, like post-apocalyptic setting. And I'm not begrudging them that they didn't, you know, jump over to my next book. You know what I'm saying? Like it's okay. It's
Yeah, some
cool.
days I want pizza, some days, I want a
Yeah.
burger.
So
If somebody expects a
yeah, I have
breakfast.
fans of my writing, like of just generally my writing, who pick up my stuff if my name is on it. But again, I totally understand if some people are like, I don't know, man, I love your YA, but post-apocalyptic, boo. Yeah, I like
Yeah.
that kind of thing.
Well, I think it's crazy when I talk to, I'll just like talk to books, all the time with people I meet, and they'll be like, I'm like, oh, so like, what do you read? I'm like, oh, I read this and this and this. I'm like, and then these are the subgenres. Like, I just started historical fiction. It's like one of the Sharpe's books. What's his name that wrote The Last Kingdom? Bernard Cornwell. And I bought it for like a dollar, and I love history, but like, I went through and I just like was sitting with my son yesterday, waiting for my wife to get on an appointment or whatever, out of school, like a meeting or whatever. And I just like flew through it. And I'm like, this is really good. But like, I did that because like, I really liked The Last Kingdom. But again, same genre though, right? Different time periods and stuff like that. But still historical fiction. So I still knew what to expect, in general for like his writing and stuff. But it's so funny to when I talk to people where I still talk to people where I'm like, do you know that there's all these subgenres that there's, or people that only read one genre or one, or they just do traditional or they just do indie. And I'm like, I love everything. I like to explore a lot of different things, but it's funny to me with how many people I'm like, there's this thing called like Kindle or Nook or the internet, right? Where there's like, and I always like to tell people because I didn't realize like indie was a thing until I met indie authors at an author event put on by like Kevin Hearn and other traditional authors. Like Brandon Sanderson was there, Pierce Brown was there, just had released Red Rising. Patrick Roth was there, just released In the Name of the Wind. I think Brandon actually just came out with like Memory of Light or something like that, like two books at the same time. And I think it was like Way of Kings that just came out. I got that signed by him, but it was just so interesting to me still to see, that shift within like the last, I would say it was like probably 10 years ago, almost exactly like 10 summers ago. But it's interesting to me where I have to think back, like some people have not gotten that. And I'm plugged in with a lot of different people. So I get a lot of books, and things thrown my way. So I feel like I'm in this ultimate center of culture diffusion, which is nice because I just get so many cool books that otherwise I would miss. And I tell people all day, I had two books the other day where I'm like, where have you been hiding? And I saw this author. I'm like, where have you been? They're like, what do you mean? I'm like, I'm everywhere shouting from the rooftops. You know what I mean? Like, send me your recommendations, like send me some books. Like, who are authors you know? And I can't believe every time that Spiffbo goes on and there's like authors on Twitter. I love it though. It's like 300, right? And I'm like, okay, friends, 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 not friends yet. But like this time there were so many authors that I had never heard of. For me, that was really cool. So I was like, follow, follow. And I was like, hey, do you want to be my friend? Like, I want to read your book, that kind of thing.
Nice. Yeah.
But it's fun, I think, to kind of be in the thick of it more because I get to always recommend things to people. But I get such an eclectic, a variety sent to me now, which I think is really fun because I don't know, to me, it's always cool as a reader to get, I feel like I get better books that way or recommendations, but I don't know. It's kind of cool because you get the director's cut, get to talk to people like yourself about, really interesting ideas. So, which really leads me to talking today about your books. So we talked a little bit about some of your other series, things like that. But really want to talk about Time Marked Warlock and just in general, like, what's the book about and how did you come up with this idea?
The book is like the Dresden Files meets Groundhog Day. That's how I normally pitch it to people,
That's
right?
awesome.
It is about Adair Finch, who is a warlock, and he has made a pact with Kronos. So he has the ability to rewind time to a point he's marked in time, but only up to 24 hours. So he can't, you know, rewind an entire week or month or year or something like that. He can only rewind the day. And he uses this power to be basically a private investigator, you know, catch criminals type of thing. And Hanneman and his brother, he used to do it, and they were well known, and they were the best in the business, because if you could rewind time, how could you not be the best in the business? You know what I'm saying? Like, up until his brother died. And that was when Adair retired. He basically gave up on life and then became a shut-in for like 10 years and didn't interact with anybody. The start of the book is a little girl, Bree, knocks on his door in the middle of the night, basically. And her mother has been murdered. And her mother told her specifically that if ever she was in danger, that she needs to find Adair because Adair will protect her and make it right. So she's there knocking on his door, being like, I need your help. My mother was just killed. And Adair, who doesn't want to help, but is, obviously coerced into helping by a little girl. You can't turn a little girl down who needs help. So he's like, okay, I guess I'll help you. But it through the course of the book, helping her, they kind of help each other. He gets out of his he gets his mojo back, really. That's what happens in the book. And we gotta catch a murderer, so that's fun.
That's always funny. I want book two to be like how Adair got his mojo back or something like that. Or got his groove back. We'll play off of Stella's groove. Yeah, and I would say she is pretty convincing. I was like, ooh, what are you gonna do here, Adair? What are you gonna do? I dare you to say no. That's what I was thinking to myself. I just love how you opened up the book though. It's like I there was just so many authors recently. I'm just like I keep you guys are making me go back to some stuff I'm writing, and I'm like, I'm not opening this very well because so many of you have like, gone through just not your typical like, oh, they're in a tavern, and that's how I felt, and I'm like, but even if it's in a different genre, right, like urban fantasy, I'm just like, oh, like, but I really liked how you opened with that scene and this whole situation, because right away I just feel like you're just jump started into different emotions, and yeah, and I just felt like it just got me right into the story like right away, like I there was no, you know what I mean, like I just read a book the other day that's a traditionally published book, I started it and yeah, I'm enjoying it, but it's taken a while to get going. I think I'm on like 25, you know what I mean, 30 pages, and it's the time period, I think. Yeah, I love how I did that, but it is true, right? It's like almost a 15, you know what I mean, like 15 20 year old urban fantasy book, right? And it's taken a while, right? But I like how yours just kind of took us up, to the problem or whatever you want to say, and got us up to speed with the characters like right away, and then we're just going now, which
The
is really
technical
nice.
term is in medias res, is when you
Okay.
start a story where it is immediate, something is immediately
Oh,
happening,
cool.
as opposed to starting with the exposition. So
Oh, cool.
traditionally, a story starts with exposition. There's the point of no return, rising tension, stuff like that. In medias res, starts are when you start on like there's a problem, like we're immediately in a problem or a scene, and we'll do the exposition after the scene is over. I like in medias res starts just because they're a little bit more like I do get invested a little quicker because there is a problem. As long as I like the main character, I guess. I have read a lot of in medias res where I wasn't a big fan of the main character, so then the problem that they're facing I'm not as interested in, but that's just a personal, you know what I'm saying? Like that's just a personal thing. But yeah, those are fun. Those are fun ways to start any kind of story. And we live in an era of entertainment. I mean, seriously, right now, if I wanted, I could go to the movies. I could watch an entire TV show on streaming. I've got video games. I could go outside and go hiking to the park. There are places to go. There's nice restaurants. We really do live just in the time period of, or like comic books. There's probably a bajillion things. I'm not even thinking of all of them. But right now, if I wanted to entertain myself, I have like 30 options. And if I pick up a book, what I want to signal to the reader is I'm not going to waste your time. Like I've got a story to tell. I have lots of fun characters. I have lots of fun situations. And I'm not like I'm going to be respectful of the time you've given me. So let's tell the story. Let's have you be entertained, and then I'll send you on your way. You know what I'm saying? Like, hopefully you enjoyed my book and your day was made better by reading it. You know what I'm saying? But I'm not going to assume that you've got all the time in the world for this. I'm going to assume that you want to be entertained and that you want to move on with stuff.
No, I think that's totally fair. But I did like what you said about like a character where you're like, even with Amita Res, where you're kind of like, I don't really care. Like, I do think, but I think that's the hard part, I think, as a writer to, as an author to try and get yourself there quick or get the audience there quickly, but also make you care about the character. That's why like Logan D. Irons and like H.L. Tinsley helped me with my novella, where like just as a prime example, where they're like, nothing, this is, I thought it was immediate res, but it really wasn't, if that makes sense. It was just kind of typical, I would say. Where we're just going through kind of like a typical storyline. And I was like, they're like, well, from what you said, this is exact opposite. What do you want? So they helped me out a lot with actually doing immediate res, and then with some of that after. And I gotta say, it's completely jump-started the entire process. And I feel even more invested as the, because it's like when you look at something for 2 years, and you're working on it, you're kind of like, holy crap, So I think it's also good for writers too, right? To be able to flow that way. So I think it shows that, and I'm like, oh, I actually care a little bit more now of what happens at the start. So I think readers, I know readers will as well, but I definitely get what you're saying. There's been times where I will not name the two-part movie on Netflix that was supposed to be huge. And I'm but as I haven't gone back to it, right? It was like 35 minutes in that they tried to do an immediate res, and I'm like, I don't care that like this empire is in your village. Like, I just don't. You know what I mean? And I'm like, I didn't feel like going back to it, but I was trying to pinpoint what the deal was, but I think that actually is really what it was, right? I love immediate res. I thought it was gonna be my thing, but as it started going, I didn't really care about the main character or their problem. So I didn't go back and watch the rest because, again, like you said, right, there were other things that happened. It's kind of felt like it was a waste of time. And I'd rather read your book or something instead, or listen to Audible. So it is what it is. But I'm just kind of curious. I'm totally curious at how you came up with this idea, because I think just the Adair in general, I love warlocks. Kronos is a great idea. So I'm just kind of curious at how you came up with this, because we hear a lot of other magical beings, but warlock is one where, I don't know, to me, like those were two cool things, like being able to turn back time and, have a similar power at all and then be a warlock, I think was just really cool. So I'm just kind of curious how you came up with that, or was it lightning, or did Adair talk to you? Like how did that happen?
I have a different series where I have characters that bond to magical creatures. So I already really like bonding, to magical creatures in general. That's just a concept that I am really partial to. So warlocks, at least historically, are in D&D and stuff like that. They make a pact with a magical creature and they get magical powers. So it's almost like bonding, to a magical creature,
Sounds
except
good.
Some of them are demons. I mean, most of the famous ones are like, then they bonded to demons or something crazy like that. I liked to imagine, what if you could bond to any sort of mythical figure or person, or you know what I'm saying? Like, Kronos is a pretty famous, he's the Titan of time in Greek mythology, who's locked away in Tartarus. So that's really cool. And I really love the rule of cool, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, for
Like,
sure.
if it's cool, I'm here for it. So Kronos is definitely cool. I really like time loop style stories. Groundhog's Day is obviously probably the most famous, but there are other ones that have been made famous, like Happy Death Day. I mean, this is a movie.
Oh,
I think probably for books, at least in the indie sphere, there's The Perfect Run, which is like a time loop book. And then there is the one there when they're there in the academy. What the hell is the name of that? I'm blanking on it, but it's a boy who starts off, he's in a school, he basically time loops the entire time so that he becomes perfect at everything.
interesting. Okay.
I cannot for the life of me remember the name of the book. I'm just gonna chalk this up to I'm tired, but
That's fair.
I like those types of things. You know what I'm
Yeah.
saying? I also like stories like the Dresden Files. You know what I'm saying? Like, where it's in an urban setting, so we're in like the modern times. I think those are fun, like in a way that a lot of traditional fantasy isn't. And I think it's fun just because it's fun to imagine what would I do if I had those powers in this situation. You know what I'm saying? And it's easier to imagine because the main character is in a normal modern setting, right? So he's living in an apartment. He uses DoorDash and Amazon like every other lunatic, you know what I'm saying? So when he rewinds powers to catch criminals, that's fun, right? Like you're like, whoa. In the sequel, I even have a sequence where he goes into like a casino and uses
Oh,
his
cool.
power to win a bunch of games so that he wins a
Yeah,
bunch of money. You know what I'm saying? Like that kind of stuff is fun. Like I'm having a fun time because that is like, oh, what if you were doing that? You know, that kind of
yeah.
thing. So I think it just heightens the like, well, what if I had it feeling. Now, I don't know if that has a technical term, but I really like when people think to themselves while they're reading my books, what if I had this power? What if I was in this situation? What would I do with it? So all of this is just, I thought all of these ideas really worked together. And when I wrote the first book, I felt like it came together really, really well. I really liked Adair and Bree. I really like that grumpy sunshine kind of dynamic. So Adair is very grumpy, you know, because he's for 10 years been retired and he's been kind of marinating in his own depression, right? So when Bree shows up and she's like full of life and vivacious, and you know, she had a terrible thing happen to her, right? Because her mother died, but she's still a young little girl who still loves life. And when Adair helps her, you know, overcome her depression, he's basically overcoming his own depression. So then they're both better by the end of the book, right? Not that I want to give too many spoilers, but it's just a fun time. And in the sequel, like he's reopened his PI business basically, and now
Oh,
he's
cool.
doing like, you know, cool, fun things. And that's just fun. Like, how is this not fun? All I can think to myself is these are all fun things. I also like to imagine that people can get past their you know, the darkest moment in your life does not define you, and it's okay to spend time dealing with it, but at some point you do have to move on, you know what I'm saying? So, I really like those kinds of messages because they're very, I guess, wholesome, and wholesome in a way that isn't shown too frequently because it's a little harder to deal with in all seriousness. It's really easy to be like, don't bully people. You know what I'm saying? Like bullying is bad. Being racist or sexist is bad. Like these are easier to show in stories. It's a lot harder to make fun a story about somebody overcoming grief and depression. You know what I'm saying? Like that's not the easiest subject matter, but it's still very important. You know what I'm saying? A lot of people go through some pretty down points in their life, and it's nice to see a story where a character gets back up. You know what I'm saying? It gets back on the horse.
No, I totally agree. I liked the like just even where they're like in his apartment, you know, gets her a glass of water and she's like, or gets her beverage. She's like, are you serious? Like, I gotta hold it up. And it and like I, but she, you know, she explains her situation, right? And it just hit me that like it's just so funny because as a teacher, I feel like that happens to me all the time. That kind of thing happens all the time. And it was just so funny because I was like that kind of comedic situation in like a tense moment. Like that's like my life. I deal with it. I just did it like 100 times today. I was like, really, what is going on right now? But the vibe, it vibe checked. I was like, this young person, this situation, this is how I'm reacting. And it made total sense. But I do agree with you. It was like just one of those examples of a situation in the book that I think, you know, did show you that there's light at the end of the tunnel. It's something so small, right? As just a little quip between two characters. But I don't know. To me, it just like, and then like the scene after that, I feel like it just really started them down the road and it was something very small. So, you know, it was just something as simple as getting someone a beverage, right? I think of Sheldon from The Big Bang Theory. Do you want a hot beverage? You're upset. Here's a hot beverage. But yeah, it just I don't know, it just connected with me because there's just so many times where like I've had a couple kids come much last couple weeks with just like horrendous problems. And I'm like, you want a Twizzlers? And they're like, no, I don't want a Twizzlers. And then they'll come back or be like, can I have that Twizzlers? I'm like, yeah, sure, you know. And I don't know, just it reminded me so much of that. And it was really funny because I just kind of chuckled. I was like, oh, I was like, I can see where, you know, down the road, you know, where this relationship is going to develop. And I don't know, it was just really cool from like a teacher standpoint. So I felt like you like really nailed that whole scenario with
Very
those
good.
chapters. It was really cool. I have to say before we move on though, the Audible is so, I love the Audible.
Oh
So
yeah.
just
Sound Booth Theater handled the audio, and they
was
had
gonna
like
ask.
a yeah, they had like a whole team of people.
God,
They
so
composed some
good.
music and they did some sound effects, and you know, like there's like a cast of people for everybody in the book, so
Yeah, and I'm somebody where I've listened to a lot of audiobooks at this point, just from, I mean, so much driving to do, feels like the last 8 years of my life. Go see my parents, I'll get through an audiobook, and I love Audible because of that. It just helps me out with my life, but and helps the drive go quicker. But yeah, this was definitely one of my more, I feel like it was definitely more enjoyable audiobook. I'm re reading like The Martian with my class right now. I'm listening to the Wil Wheaton like version, which is really good. The first guy was great, but Wil Wheaton like has the smarminess down, and just it's like right there. I think of him, I just picture it as him, as Mark Watney. But yeah, I really like that one. But I actually like this one way more, which it really surprised me, because I don't normally hear the cast of characters, the music, and I see people doing that a little bit more and more. And I gotta say, I really think that that's more my jam. So I hope more people are doing that. I was just curious, do you think that they're gonna be doing the same thing if you did another audio for book two, or?
Oh yeah, they've already recorded book two. Yeah, it'll come
Okay.
out the exact same
Sweet.
time the ebook comes
Awesome.
out. So yeah, everything's good to go. I was really happy with how they did it, and I was really excited for, you know what I'm saying? Like, all this is exciting. I hope more people check out the audio just because I feel like it's really
Oh,
awesome,
it's
you know what I'm
awesome.
saying? Like,
Yeah, it's super cool. Yeah. If you guys don't like, just check it out. If it's not your thing, whatever. But like, I do think it's interesting to see, you're probably one of three authors I've seen literally within the last month who have used them. So I have a couple other people like sitting in my queue after I finish this book, and two other ones where I'm like, oh, I'm really excited to see, I'm just excited to see more of what they do, because yours is the first one that I've listened to from them. So I was really anxious to, kind of see what other books they're doing, other types of music they're using, or sound effects, or I just, my grandfather was really into the original, like the Shadow, like radio state, radio TV show or radio show and stuff. And when they did the movie, with Alec Baldwin, like we went to go see it. And I was like, how was it? And I was like, I liked it. And my grandfather was like, oh, it's just not the same. And I remember we went to Cracker Barrel, and at the time this is back when they had cassettes and stuff. So we got the tapes and we happened to see the Shadow, so we grabbed it. So your book literally like took me back to driving around with him, with the cassette, listening to the Shadow, like the original ones. And it was really cool. So for me, it was like very nostalgic, and I think that's why I really liked the way that they did it. It really resonated with me. I don't know. I feel like it's definitely, yeah, definitely been my favorite like audiobook because of that. So great job by them and you for that decision.
Wow.
I'm really looking forward to that. Since you said that, I'm actually really excited now. Even more excited for book two. So that's super cool.
Oh yeah,
But
I
that's
can't wait for book
also,
two.
do you have like a relative date, or?
No, it's already up for pre-order. Comes out in
What?
November.
Why am I not getting these notifications? All my stuff is messed up right now. Like no matter what I do, like whether it's my private
It's
or
okay.
work
It's okay. Yeah.
email. So
You
somebody
know,
else
I'll be
has it for today.
announcing it when it gets a little closer, but it technically comes out this month, so I'm excited for it.
All right. Well, I know what I'm doing after this. I just got paid, so I'm really excited about that. So
There you
that's
go.
really cool. Awesome. Well, super cool. I'm really curious, in terms of like how you came up with the magic system, and kind of in terms of the magic itself, like what did you focus on the most within this novel?
I guess for the magic system, I wanted it to be a little bit more modular. So usually warlocks, at least in other medias like Dungeons and Dragons or something, they make a pact with like one creature and that's it. In this book, warlocks could make a pact with five creatures.
Oh, cool.
And I have this core system basically. It's based off of So there is a, like the Hindu teachings about chakra that flow through the body. They talk about how your chakra flows through different points that are really important for you as a human. And I believe it's either 7 or 12, depending on which teachings you're reading, but it's stuff like your heart and your stomach and your lungs and, stuff like that. That's where the chakra flows through. I decided to use that as inspiration. And so I have
Oh,
5 cores to the human being, and I have it as the crown, the heart, the soul or the spirit, the loins, and technically the eyes too. So crown, eyes, heart, spirit, loins. And these are the 5 parts that kind of make you up as a human being. And you can bond creatures to each one of these cores. And so that's how the warlocks work. Adair has Kronos bound to the crown, so the head. And he also has a pact that he's made with, and he's made it with Keiko, an ifrit of a rebellion. So an ifrit is like a fire creature in mythology from like the Middle East.
Oh,
So
interesting.
technically, Adair has lots of fire magic as well because of this other thing that he's bonded to. And in the first book, he also makes a third bond with a mischief spirit. So he needs to break into a building, and he makes the bond with a mischief spirit because that'll allow him to open up locks
Oh,
and
that's
not
cool.
show up on cameras, right?
Oh, that's
So
awesome.
he does that, to do the sneaking around because he's investigating. And I really like the system because this allows him for more powers than just the one power, you know what I'm saying? It allows us to have more like packs. So in future books, he could meet other creatures and maybe make pacts with them to get their magic and stuff like that. I wanted just more storytelling possibilities. I wanted a wider variety of things that could happen. You know what I'm saying? So I thought by having these 5 cores and bonding creatures to them that this could be really fun. You know what I'm saying? Like, just in general. And I have another magic system for the witches, and they're technically in the books too. And I have werewolves technically show up in book 2. So I have cool magic systems because I really, really like cool magic systems, and I do think about them in terms of like, how can I use this in a story? And it's better to have it more open than limiting, because the more limiting it is, the less I can tell of a story. Like if Adair could only rewind time. Like, that's fun, don't get me wrong, but it is a little bit more limiting on what we can do. But if he also can summon fire, control fire, if he can also pick locks, if he could also bond with a different creature, like maybe we can run into other Greek gods and he can get their powers, right? Like, Kronos was not the only Titan. There are also other, really famous gods. Everybody knows Hades, everybody knows Zeus. You know what I'm saying? What if we found those guys? Could he get those types of powers? So it's just fun to imagine again, more like, oh man, what if we could do all the things? So that's all. I do think of things a lot in terms of storytelling potential, as opposed to I just want one cool ability. You know what I'm saying?
No, it's super cool. I'm just curious. So to me, it sounds like 5-pack cartridge system, right? You're like loaded up here, you load up here, load up here. Now, I'm just curious because that's really cool that you're talking about like story based. And I always think about that too. I'm like, this is cool, but I'm like, what does it have to do with the story? Like, I had a guy where I'm like, okay, he could have a cool sword, but like, did the his peeps just give it to him? And instead, I found something cool where it's like it happens in a story in the first book, like the first actual book. And I changed it and I was like, oh, that's really neat. And yeah, I felt like it drove the story more. And then anytime now where you see that he has the sword in the other books, you know why, but it's cooler because of the story, right? It's not just something
Yeah.
you found or, yeah. And he had like, do a lot to get it right. So yeah, I definitely agree with, I think story is the best way to do that. But I'm just curious, in terms of like, if you, let's say that you're Adair and you're loaded up with 5 awesome, like, gods or mythological beings, is he going to be subjected to this for the rest of his life, prolonged or not? Or are they able to kind of get out of the bonding at some point? I'm just curious.
So the warlocks can make a pact with the creature, and the pact is basically a deal, right? Like, so when he makes the deal with the mischief spirit in book 1, What happens is the mischief spirit walks up and he's like, "Hey, I need your magic." And the creature's like, "I'll give you my magic, but in return, you have to find me a human body, like a dead human
Gotcha.
body. Me as the spirit, I want to be a human, or I want to inhabit the human body. So this is the deal we're making."
Gotcha.
And Adair says yes, and then he gets access to the mischief spirit's magic. But then in, payment, he has to get the mischief spirit a human body, right? And as soon as he does get the mischief spirit a human body, he's completed his pact. And at
Gotcha.
that point, he can release the magic if he no longer wants to use it. And then he can get somebody else, so he doesn't have to keep this magic forever. It's all about whatever deal you make. So some
That's
of the
cool.
deals could be really easy, right? Like, oh, I really want silver, like the silver metal. Like, there's a different warlock in the book who makes a pact with a dwarf, and the dwarf wants various types of metal. So that's their deal, right? The warlock has to get him these interesting metals. And as soon as they do, they can end the pact. He can get rid of the magic, the dwarf's magic, or he can keep using it until at a time he wants to give it up. As soon as he does give it up, though, he needs to make another pact to get it back if he need, what I'm
That's cool.
saying? So
Yeah, that's awesome.
yeah, it's very modular. So, he could make packs with less and less of creatures. He could just only have five at a time. Like, five is
Yeah.
the limit.
Yeah, like you can only like wear four rings at a time in Diablo 2 in your
Yeah, there you
inventory.
go.
Yeah. But that's so cool though, because I totally get what you're saying even more now, because if you're doing it modular based like that, yeah, like it could be a shorter pack, could be a longer pack, right? But yeah, that does give you. That's cool. It just gives you such a wider range of stories or beings, or like your possibilities are really endless there, right? If you can constantly switch out and,
Yeah.
fulfill a pact or, but then there's a lot of cool things I think with maybe he doesn't want to, maybe he tries to prolong it, or maybe they do, right? Because we know some of those snarky beings that will do that. So I don't know. To me, that just sounds really cool. I always love when people set themselves up for better stories. If that
yeah.
makes sense. I think because it makes it easier for you, makes it more interesting for us, and just makes it, a better book or storyline. So I think that's super cool. Now you
Yeah.
got my I think I th I just thought like, with Academy Arcanus, I just loved it because with your menagerie of different like creatures, it just like it really just put in my head. I was like, okay, I had to buy Mimic Arcanus right away. And I can't wait to get that one. Cool, because I'm like, what is Shmi gonna put in front of me now? Because the creatures that the character's already bonded with are so cool and unique, and even in the menagerie and stuff like that, right? But I was thinking to myself, like world building wise, I'm like, it just felt like there was just so many different possibilities out there. As a reader and a writer, I'm like, okay, what's coming next? Like, what else could you bond with? And I just thought that was super cool because it just made me want to read the next book and, see what type of creatures, that are just in the book, let alone the characters, right? It was just like, I got to catch the next Pokemon. Like, that's how
Yeah,
it feels.
right.
So I
Yeah.
just thought that was like super cool. So I love that you did the kind of something similar here with the bonding. Because I did think that was one of the stronger things, within that, that other world, in those books. I just thought like just how you did the bonding was really cool too. So that's cool that that kind of gave you this type of idea, with the warlocks. I think it's like you said, right? And that's what I thought was cool is like you didn't just do the typical warlock thing, if that makes sense. Like, I don't know, or people like they don't really like a warlock in some urban fantasies I've read, they just can do anything and there's no, you know what I mean? And I'm like, that's boring to me. There's like no restrictions. But I liked how you had the 24 hours kind of thing. I was thinking like Nicolas Cage in Next, where he can only see 5 minutes in the future, because that was like, it made it more exciting, So I
Yeah.
think 24 hours is you can do quite a bit there, but it's also not like super crazy amount of time when you really think about it. Like, if you're injured or sleeping like he was, right? You're like, oh dang, I'm 25 hours ago was this event. So I
Yeah.
just, yeah, I felt like it was a really good like in the middle sort of choice to go. So that was super cool. So yeah, well, that's really awesome. Yeah, my mind whirling before
Yeah.
my writing session.
All those imaginations percolating or whatever, yeah.
For sure. Yeah, so I just want to talk about Adair just in general. So when it came to the character of Adair Finch, Kind of curious, like what your plans were for like just his character in general, like his characterization. What was like your main goal for him, and how did you set up his character? We talked a little bit at the start of the novel, but I'm kind of curious that like why that was the route you chose to go, with where his character started, essentially when we first meet him.
Oh, I really like the more sarcastic, jaded, like a male character, right? So
He definitely is. I love
yeah,
it.
he's world weary. He's seen things. He's seen his brother die, you know, like he's kind of done with people shit. That kind of attitude is very funny. It's very funny in juxtaposition to somebody who is bright-eyed and naive, or like really loving life, you know what I'm saying? Because they play off each other really well.
Yeah.
There's a reason the grumpy sunshine trope is a trope, because it's just fun. I wanted to tell the story of people getting back on the horse after depression, but I also don't want to tell a story where we are wallowing in depression. So
Yeah,
we
yeah, yeah.
start the story 10 years after his brother's death, so that I don't have to write 10 years of him being a sad sack. Does that make any sense? That's
No,
not,
yeah.
it's not fun
Yeah.
to read.
Yeah.
It's fun to have as a backstory. And I say fun as in big fat quotes, but it's fun to know he was a sad sack for a long time, and now he's not going to be a sad sack anymore, because that is hopeful, and you know, you like to see it. You know, nobody wants to see a character that they like go through a period of depression. Like,
Yeah,
that's just not fun. You know what I'm saying? It's just, so this is me just making a bunch of choices to make sure that the reader will have a good time. We're finding Adair 10 years after the bad things have happened. He's still down on his luck and not himself, but we're immediately going to start bringing him out of his shell, right? Because he's been locked in his apartment. But Bree shows up and she's like, please help me. And he's like, I don't really want to help you. And she's like, you're the only one who can. And he's like, okay, I guess I'll do it for a little bit. You know, like that's what he basically says. He's like, I'll help you for a little bit. And then he leaves, and then he goes to the crime scene, and he starts seeing things that make him think something suspicious is going on. And even though he said that he was gonna help her a little bit, he keeps helping her just a little bit more and a little bit more. And then it turns out something big is going on. Like, it wasn't just a murder. There's something else happening. And so now he's really wrapped up in the case. Now he's got to discover what's going on. Bree's here the entire time. She's asking him questions the whole time in like a fun manner, like, how does your magic work? How do warlocks work? What's going on? And he's explaining it. And through this process, like, this is all fun, right? Like, this is a fun time that we're having. And I make story decisions based on what I feel like is going to be like an entertaining thing for the reader. It's fun to see a guy slowly come out of his shell from depression. It's not fun to watch a character slide into depression and be super sad, right? A lot of people don't like Harry Potter book five because Harry Potter is too angsty and super sad and angry at everybody, because that's a part of the flow of the story, is that now he, you know, it's a downer. And what I want is a story where it's very hopeful. It's very fun. You walk away from it being like, I had a great time there. So yeah, that's all the decision-making processes that went to Adair. You know, he gets his mojo back by the end of the book. Now, again, not that I want to give too many spoilers away, but you know, that's just my author guarantee to you. Don't worry, you know, it's gonna be a fun time. We're not gonna have depressing things. Bree's not gonna die, you know what I'm saying? Like, and put him back into another depression spiral. That's not what happens in this book. This is a fun book.
Well, I take it back to like Jim Butcher. I forget which Dresden. I think I'm on book like 8 right now, and it was like, Harry talks. I think it's like book 5 or something at the start. Like Harry talks about when Susan's leaving. I don't feel bad saying that here because it's like an 18-year-old book right now. But like, you know what I mean, 20, whatever. But like, yeah, like he, but he, but I thought I always thought like. Oh, like, yeah, what about this time? But it's like I agree with you. I would not have wanted to see a year and a half of Harry being depressed and not going out and his friends being like worried about him. We just get like the snip bit at the start and then we see that in the character interaction, right? But then, you get a little bit of like it puts you down a little bit and then he brings you back up throughout the story, and then he does better at the end. So I can definitely see where, you know, where that makes total sense. And yeah, nobody wants to see 10 years of somebody just wallowing. I mean, I've
Yeah,
actually had that
exactly.
happen in a book, and I'm like, I can't keep going because I have no reason to keep
Yeah.
going, and neither does this character. It's like, what's gonna happen between now and then? So I like how you went with the catalyst after the 10 years. But and young people, I love it. Like, it's that Lethal Weapon trope, as I always call it, you know, like I'm too old for this, you know. And then you got Mel Gibson's character, while depressing, whatever, like he's such an interesting character. But it's nice, right? Because he's coming in, you know, and shaking things up for, you know, Danny Glover. And yeah, I always love that. I have a shadow walker that's like that. He's not that old, but he's a little bit older than me, and he's got a young buck coming in. And I agree with you. It's so funny to see their interactions, and I'm like, oh, I could put all my teaching experience into this, being the older one and having to deal with somebody younger. And like, I told you not to do that. Why? Because it's a dumb move, and they do it anyway with the fallout. So it is. I agree. There's stuff like that that's just way more fun. So, well, that's awesome. I'm glad to know that we're not gonna be super depressed at the end of this book. So.
No. These are meant to be fun urban fantasies, so.
Yeah. I just think it's funny though, because like James Logan and you did something so similar. And I know we talked about your character, so I don't want to give it away for his, but you guys did something similar with like this character and then a little bit younger, and trying to have that relationship to help pull the person out of, you know, their funk. And I just think it's so funny that you guys both did that. And as a teacher, it happens to me all the time. It happens to me all the time.
It's a
So.
pretty common trope in a lot of stories, just in general.
I think, I guess I just never realized it before, if that makes sense, because it's my everyday life. So I didn't, you know, I didn't pick it out, you know, but I don't know. I just think you both did a really good job with it. But I do agree that it makes total sense, because that's what kids do for me all the time. People are like, oh, you know, there's crazy things happening, or like I had surgery and stuff. They're like, why are you in a good mood? I'm like, my students are in a good mood. It's hard to be around new life, right? Or my son, right? It's hard to be Danny Glover when you're with a, you know, a young person who presents all these possibilities and energy and life. I mean, like, good luck being a stick in the mud around them, you know, like it's just not gonna happen. So I think it
Yeah,
makes total
it's a fun dynamic. I mean, specifically, again, it's a pretty common trope. I think there are a couple movies that really exemplify it. I think The Professional, right? The one with the
Oh,
hitman.
yeah.
And then there's like Wreck-It Ralph. That's another one that
Oh,
almost
that's such a good
exactly does
example.
that.
I never even realized that. You're totally right.
So this is a very common trope, but common for a reason, because it's really fun. It's really fun to see older, grumpier, jaded character be less grumpy and jaded because of the younger sidekick, basically, that's there to lighten their life. Very fun. I have a good time anytime I see it, on a movie or see it in a book or something like that. So it's a lot of fun.
Wow, you just like, I loved Wreck-It Ralph, but you just like put it up a notch for me now. Like, that's really funny.
Wreck-It Ralph is fantastic
It's such a
storytelling.
good, yeah,
If
that's
you want to
so good.
break down how they use foreshadowing and how they break it up into the 3X structure, very,
Oh,
very great. Super great if you want to analyze it for writing techniques. So
And they talk about a good time. Like, that was one I went to with my I think it was my first nephew. And I'm with my sister-in-law, and we're just dying. My brother's like, it's a really good movie. I'm like, yeah, I like the second one too. That was really good. Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, well, I guess I'm not with you there. I like the first one. I think the first one's like either a 9 or 10 out of 10. I love the story structure. The writing is really snappy. Everything about that, I was like, man, what a great movie. And then with the sequel, I would give it a solid 3 or 4 out of 10. I thought
Oh,
that the
okay.
writing was actually on the negative side. I mean, I focused on the writing way too much. Did not like the writing, did not like character conclusions, did not like even what I felt like were character arcs. So, but if you enjoy it, that's totally great. I don't want to take that away. No, if you enjoy stuff, you totally should enjoy stuff. But when I give recommendations to be like, hey, you should study this movie to see how the story works, Wreck-It Ralph, number one, way high on the list. Totally, you should watch it to be like, wow, what great writing. but not Wreck-It Ralph 2. I do not recommend Wreck-It Ralph 2 for writing.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm gonna have to go back and watch two again. Maybe I missed something. That's like I just well, it's funny you talk about recommendations. I just recommended to I had J.R. Wise on, oh, and I was talking to him, and then we had a couple recommendations, and I can't remember if it was him or the sci-fi author had on after, but one of them had not seen Firefly. And then they had private, it was the next author, but they messaged me and they're like, oh, Firefly. I'm like, oh God. I was like, you know that thing where you're like, people are like, oh, this is really great. And then you watch it and it's not. I was like, that's not Firefly. I go, Firefly is just great. I'm like, I don't have anybody I've ever recommended it on the thousands of people who have not really enjoyed it. But we were talking about like Mal and, just, and Jane and just all different characters and stuff. We talked differently, I would say, about Serenity.
Well, I
But
liked Firefly. I liked Serenity too.
I definitely like Firefly more. Because then they came to me like, I watched all of Firefly and I had to watch Serenity. They're like, I'm like, yeah. I'm like, it was a conclusion at least. I go, and there was a lot of really good parts in it. I go, I really wish, like, I'm sure in an alternate universe, that's the one thing. If I was a dare, I would want to turn back time and change Fox. But like maybe there's somebody else I could bond with, and have a pact with to get season two. Like all I want is season two. I'll get you a dead body so you can have it. Just give me season two of Firefly. Like I think that'd be awesome. But well, yeah, that's just I totally agree with you. There's so many great tropes with that, Owen, and it's always fun. I was thinking Macaulay Culkin. There's so many times he's like with. I forget if it was his dad, it was Ted Danson or something. Like even like way in the 90s, I feel like that was like they were always doing that type of trope. So it is a time classic one.
Yeah,
That's
it's
awesome.
good.
So you talked a little bit about your plans for this world and its characters. So you mentioned book two and book three. So if we enjoy it, were we looking at a trilogy, a series? Can I lock in now for like 14? I'm just kind of curious. I had a couple people ask me the same thing. I was like, oh, I'm gonna talk to Shamin. They're like, oh, we'll throw this question. I'm like, that's a good question. So I guess we're just kind of wondering, like, generally, like, do we just have to make sure it's a bestseller before we get book four? Or we're just kind of curious. So.
I guess that's kind of the plan. So right now I'm gonna do three books, and
Cool.
Sound Booth Theater is on board to do three audiobooks, right? So I'm part way through writing book three. Like book
Oh,
two's already
awesome.
done, like all that other kind of stuff. So I'm definitely gonna do three books. But it'll just depend on the sales, like how well the sales go. So that when the sequel comes out, if there's a really high read-through rate, and there's a high read-through rate through book three, then yeah, I'll probably, go till book 18. You know what I'm saying? Because it's that kind of series. It's
Oh, perfect. Okay.
it's the kind of series that I could go for a very, very long time, because
Awesome.
it's set up so that Adair can be a PI, we can catch criminals, we can solve crimes, you know what I'm saying? We could do lots of fun shenanigans. But if the sales are bad, you know what I'm saying? I'm not gonna go 18 books on.
In a sinking ship.
Yeah, if nobody is reading it. Now, I hope everybody enjoys it. The reception for book one has been very, very positive. It's only been out for like maybe a couple months, and it sold decently. So when the sequel comes out, if it's more of the same, or if it's even a little bit better, then yeah, we'll continue. But if it gets worse, like if people are like, I didn't like book two and I didn't like book three or things like that, then I'm just gonna be pragmatic about it. But
Oh, for sure.
we're already guaranteed at least a three, so we'll see how the sales go. So maybe your reviews will help, maybe this podcast will make sure that it will get up to book 18. But yeah, I'm just being a realist with you. If it makes money, I'll write more of them. I've got plans to write more of them. But if it doesn't make
Awesome.
money,
All right, I will sell some books. We got three books. You got it.
you're doing God's work over here. Like I said, you're amazing.
My friends like Christopher G. Breding a while back, he's like, oh, like I just kept sharing and sharing and I was tagging and I was like, oh, he's at, I was like 2.99 per followers on X. He's like, Ken, we got here 300. I was just like, so he texted me a while back. He's like, thank you so much. I was like, it's not philanthropy. I'm like, I need more of your books. I'm like, I don't want them. I'm like, I need them. His first one, The Hellborn King, was so damn good. And now I got too busy to read the second one. But he has a novella too, so I'm getting caught up. But I was just like, no, I'm not being nice. I was like, I just want to read the books. I was like, you need to sell the books to write more books for me to read more books. So I
Yeah.
always tease people. I'm like, it's a selfish thing. I want more books from you guys. So I gotta get gotta do what I can, right, to get those books written and sold. So, but yeah, that's I just was curious. I just think there's just so many. I was listening to the audio particular last week. I'm like, there's just so many cool things I think you could do. So let me know if there's anything I can do, for books 1, 2, and 3. Maybe we can plan to do, a couple of crazier things for, book 2 and 3, to get some more stuff out there. But yeah, I'm really enjoying the characters, the story, and I'm really excited to finish up. If I didn't have homework from school with The Martian, I
Right.
definitely would have been a lot further along. But yeah, I'll be done sometime next week, so I'll probably message you ahead of time, get you the schedule and everything. But yeah, I'm really excited
Nice.
to see where you go with it. And it's so interesting because I think there's, again, like, that's why I mentioned this earlier. I just think there's a lot of things that I really enjoyed about, like, Academy Arcanus, that you did, or the way you wrote it. And it is different than this book, in this series, but there's a lot of those things that I really enjoyed. I feel like you really understand characterization. You really understand what readers want in the subgenres and in each of them. Which you don't usually get from people that write multiple.
I'm a big
I feel
fan,
like,
though. That's the key.
which I think is good for people to know, right? Like, I always tell people, like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm writing what I know and writing what I love to read. I love D&D. I love D&D type stories. So I have a
Yeah,
few,
good,
right?
good.
So
Yeah.
I think, you know what I mean? So I think that that's just a good message for people in general. Not to not. Not like I'm not saying not do something new or unique or whatever, but like, yeah, I think if you're enjoying it, like you said, right, I can tell that you enjoyed writing the story, and I think it comes out a lot for the readers in particular. So I think that's what people should go for. So I think it's awesome.
Nice.
So do you have any, I mean, you talked a little bit so far, but I just want to make sure we had some time. If you have any other news updates, any other current projects, I know you and John hardly sleep. You guys are always, doing something super cool. So I was just curious if there's anything else that you wanted to mention to us before we head out for the day. But
I guess I have the next Arcanist book. So Academy Arcanist, the series is still ongoing, and the next one comes out in December. So Labyrinth
that's
Arcanist.
exciting.
So yeah, that's cool, right? I
That's
have big
super cool.
plans for 2025, but I haven't really announced them
Oh,
anywhere
cool.
yet. But hopefully 2025 is filled with amazing.
Oh, cool. Well, that's awesome. Well, I'll save you a slot. That's gonna be like my season 5. So, like I said, anytime you guys wanna, hop on, you just let me know and we'll chit chat, get everything else out there. I just wanna mention to people one more time, because I know sometimes people skip to the end of the video, especially here. So you can find all of Shimi's books, social links, everything like that down below in the description, anywhere where you are watching or listening to this podcast. I'll also link our previous episode as well, where we talked a little bit more in depth about books 1 and 2 and the Half-Life Empire and a bunch of other books. Today we kind of focused a little bit more on one, but that's fine. Shimi's got a lot of really cool stuff. So yeah, check them all out. Do what I did, just buy them all, and then go on Audible, do the same thing. And then we'll get more really cool books in each genre. So, but Shimi, thank you so much. I always love chit-chatting with you. You gave me a lot of ideas
This is
for
great.
my writing session tonight. So I'm super excited to finish this book in particular. And then I actually just realized I lied to you earlier. I actually have 2 reviews for you that'll be popping out the same week, because I also have Academy Arcanist as well
Oh, nice,
in
nice.
my
Yeah.
back pocket. So I already have my notes for that. So, but I want everybody in the audience to check out both of my review videos as well. They'll be linked down in the description. But other than that, Shmi, I hope you have a great rest of the day, both of you.
You.
And if you
Yeah,
need
have a nice
anything at
day.
all, yeah, let me know. I'll talk to you later on social media, my friend.
Okay.
See you later.